Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome the governor of the heart of Texas, Keith Cruz.
Time to resign from the human race. Wipe those tears from your lovely face. Every wave to the man in the old red caboose before all hell breaks loose. Before you go, I wish you'd come. Before you leave, wish you'd love me some. I'll give you all of the dreams you can use before all hell breaks loose. Now I know what the gypsy meant when she told me you'll never be president. She said, adopt a Korean, kill your moose before all hell breaks loose. Poked fun at my cowboy shoes. You said they look just like big canoes. Well, it's time for the chosen ones to choose before all hell breaks loose. Turn out the lights, honey, turn on the news. God save the queen and the kangaroo. And what kind of rubbers did Joseph use before all hell broke loose? Time to resign from the human race. Wipe those tears from your lovely face, baby. Wave to the man in the old red caboose before all hell breaks loose. My favorite Irish toast, may the best of the past be the worst of the future. And of course, my favorite Texas toast, here's to honor, get on her and stay on her. Song that just sort of wrote itself one evening. I don't even think I was at home at the time. I wrote it in Nashville, and it had to do with the Grand Ole Opry sponsor, which was, at that time, was the Nashville Life and Casualty Insurance Company. They no longer sponsor the Opry, I understand. There's a new sponsor who's taken their place. Would anyone like to hazard a guess at who the new sponsor is? Halliburton's a good guess, but it's no, is Walmart. Since if my career goes south, I may become a Walmart greeter pretty soon. Works out fine for me. But that night in Nashville, I was so high, I needed a stepladder to scratch my ass. I mean, it was an amazing mystical experience. And I twisted the title of the song around a bit, and I realized that the song reflects the arc of D. Ford Bailey's life, who was the harmonica player. He was a black harmonica player, and the first African-American, I think, to be on the Grand Ole Opry as a regular. And when D. Ford died, I think only Bill Monroe went to his funeral. Bill Monroe also being the only Democrat on the Grand Ole Opry. Bill Monroe also being the only guy who came down to see off Hank Williams on his last ride through Nashville. So, but those are, again, those are the old-time Democrats. That's not Harry Reid, that's Harry Truman Democrats, you know, that's Democrats who stood up for the people. I myself don't have much to do with either the Crips or the Bloods. So I twisted the title of the song to be, instead of Nashville Life and Casualty, Nashville Casualty and Life. In faded gabardine he used to stand, down by the Union Station with that old hat in his hand, a banjo picking devil, a singing ragtime saint. The young folks called him beautiful and the old folks called him quaint. And the station master pointed to the sign, and they busted him for loitering when he was making memories rhyme. Out in the falling snow he'd sing his song to a world too cold to listen and too white to sing along. Just a Nashville casualty in life. Done left him without a dime ever since the good Lord took his wife. You find him strumming on the corner all the time. And most of Music City never saw the world within the song of a Nashville casualty and life goes on. The attic sets a dusty hat and cane, and the kids that found a banjo there all rusted from the rain. I strummed a little rusty ragtime beat, and I sang for every solo out on the street. I could almost see him standing in the rain, his black and blind reflecting all the pain of all the years and people passing by, and all the ringing memories that can make a banjo cry. Just a Nashville casualty of life. It's a riff that's held to play. Things for you living on the street, and Lord, you sleeps in the back of some cafe. And most of Music City never see the world within the song of a Nashville casualty and life goes on. Great to be here tonight. I'm a big believer in the traditional Mormon marriage. It's not same sex. It's same six, actually. Well, I've been trying to make that joke funny, but I can't. Got a slightly warm reception in a charity. Anyway, I'm 67 years old, thank you very much. Although I read at the 69-year-old level. Got my last will and testament all wrapped up. When I die, I'm to be cremated and the ashes are to be thrown in Rick Perry's hair. We've got a funny and strange political landscape going on in Texas now. It's changed quite a bit. Now we see all of the Aggies and the Blondes, they're telling Rick Perry jokes, you know? It's just kind of... but for me personally, I always follow the advice that Willie Nelson gave me before I got into politics, before I ran for governor. The advice he gave me was, if you're gonna have sex with an animal, always make it a horse. Because that way, if things don't work out, at least you know you've got a ride home. You know, with age comes certain problems. I myself am losing my hearing, and frankly, I think it's a good thing because I don't have to listen to all the bullshit of the world. And you can think of imaginative things that people are saying to you that are a lot more interesting than what they're really saying. But anyway, the only two things I care about really are Libya and Charlie Sheen. But I'm always reminded when I don't hear something of the old man who he wanted to rake leaves in his backyard, but he couldn't find the rake. So he hollers up to his wife on the deck, and he says, "Where's the rake?" And his wife says, "What?" And the old man goes, "I need the rake." So the wife goes, and the old man says, "What?" And the wife says, "I left it behind the bush." My aim is here. Now, do we have any Delbert McClinton fans here tonight? You know, I never really cared for the guy much. Delbert's a great guy. He recorded this on a tribute album to the Kingster. I've now had, there's two tribute albums out already. And there's one coming out late this summer by a guy named Jesse Dayton, who played guitar for Waylon Jennings for a number of years. And Jesse's terrific. This will be kinky songs that are of more serious nature, but they will be performed kind of in a Waylon, Neil Young, Bruce Springsteen, Steve Earle kind of a style. And it's very interesting what he does to some of these. So this will be out in August. And I always like to, you know, three tribute albums while you're still alive is not a good sign. I mean, they're either they, like, take Towns Van Zandt, who, when Towns Van Zandt was bugled to Jesus, he must have gotten 40 tribute albums. It was incredible. But during his lifetime, zero. Nothing. So, really no.
What's that mean?
Well, I don't know what it means. But anyway, this is back to Delbert here. Delbert recorded this little booger on one of the tribute albums of the Kingster.
Excuse me.
Ain't you the golden boy of the silver screen? Your mama's pride and joy, a promoter's dream. time for autographs. Sailing boats or trains. No time for dreams to last. Gotta catch that plane. One magic midnight show. She taught you how it feels. One so long ago. When rock and roll was real. Turn on your radio. The words you hear are mine. Should have told you long ago, but I never had the time. Anybody bring their children here tonight? Adult children involved, all right? All right, there were, I saw some little boogers running around earlier. As my father always said, treat children like adults and adults like children. And that's always worked for me. And so we don't have any children. That's a good thing, because one thing about the Kingster is that I never like to say fuck in front of a C-H-I-L-D if I can avoid it. I don't do it. And here's a song I wrote when I was just 11 years old. It's the first song I ever wrote. You know this little player, help me out. Old Ben Lucas had a lot of mucus coming right out of his nose. He'd pick and pick till it made you sick, but back again it grows. 11 years old when I wrote the book. When it's cock picking time in Texas, boys, it's booger picking time for men. He'd raise that finger mean and hostile, stick it in that waiting nostril. Here he comes with a green one once again. Everybody. Old man Lucas had a lot of mucus coming right out of his nose. He'd pick and pick till it made you sick, but back again it goes. Once more. Old man Lucas had a lot of mucus coming right out of his nose. He'd pick and pick till it made you sick, but back a little hint. One of the performers who played on a recorded version of that song was hanging out in a bar in Los Angeles called the Troubadour in 1976 when I was doing some touring with the Rolling Thunder with Bob Dylan. And this was a break we were taking, so I was just hanging out at the bar one night. And for those of you that are really have had your hip card punched, you probably know who I'm talking about, but don't reveal it, please, because I would spoil the whole weekend for the Kingster. So I'm at the bar, and I'm really pretty flying by Jewish radar by that time, I would say. And a guy comes up to me, and he's got a kind of a gambler, river gambler, cowboy style hat on. And some red facial hair. And we start talking. I'm trying to figure out who he is. I know he's either Ray Wiley Hubbard or Rusty Weir or one of those Texas singer-songwriters, but I don't know which one. And he seems to be very familiar with me. So he's elbowing me, saying, Kingster, what are we going to do, you know? We go into the men's room, we do some Peruvian marching powder. And I think, I don't know who was hanging out that night. But anyway, so I'm there for about 8 hours. I think Joni Mitchell or somebody was playing. We were there a long time. And this guy is with me right on my shoulder the whole damn night. And at some point, I had to, you know, I turned to the guy and I said, "Look, man, I really hate to do this, I have to ask you this, but what is your name?" And the guy says, "Eric Clapton." Now there's and Eric played on Old Man Lucas, he played Sly Dobro in the song. And you know, that song is known all over the world, and it has not been a financial pleasure for the Kingsters. It's never played on the radio. So. Well, maybe nobody would. They're not listening now. And you knew that was Eric on there, right? Or would you not? Oh, he's, yeah. That's,
I know
that
Ringo was Jesus
on Men's Room of Life. That's great. You know, it's a tragic thing, Ken, that it's a tragic mistake to start up a conversation with one person in your life. Borrowing a page from Bob Dylan, Bob will take a song and he will change the music behind it or slightly change the lyrics for 50 years, the same song. You know, he will change it around to make it more accessible or more, you know, give it more appeal to the modern era. So I've done that too. I've taken an old song of mine and worked on the lyric a little bit, and I've changed the title. Now the new title is, "Waitress, Please Waitress, Come Sit on My Facebook." It may seem like a trivial change. Anyone wishing to sing along, remember how Texans pronounce these words? "Waitress, please waitress, come sit on my face." And the cities mentioned are Dallas, Alton, and Yeaton. And of course, Texans always, they always pronounce the word Jewish with one syllable. Like, he's Jewish. He's Jewish. And they pronounce the word Jew with about 11 syllables. For instance, "She married a Jew." Just a little thing I had out a few years ago, until they made me put it back in. Well, I pulled into Dallas on a cold December day for coffee and a donut at the Greasy Spoon Cafe. Spied me a pretty young waitress standing by a tray, but you couldn't believe her sweet young ears when the waitress heard me say, "Oh, waitress, please waitress, come sit on my face. Eating ain't cheating, Lord, it ain't no disgrace. Whoa, bring me a Lone Star, make it a cake. Waitress, please waitress, come sit on my face." Well, I walks up to the jukebox feeling kind of mean. The waitress said, "Hey, stupid, that's a cigarette machine." "Well, looky here, young waitress, would you care to make a bet? And if that there ain't a jukebox, you can smoke my cigarette." "Oh, waitress, please waitress, come sit on my face. Eating ain't cheating, Lord, it ain't no disgrace. Well, bring me a Lone Star, make it okay. Waitress, please waitress, come sit on my face. You're the prettiest thing in Dallas, yeah, Dallas, you're home. know I come all the way from deep, that I feel so all alone. Used to live in Auburn, and I moved up to Big D in hopes to get my big break on national TV. Honey, I think I have what it takes to make you a very big star. Way out there in Hollywood, choo 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 bug. But first, whoa, white drink, please, white drink, come sit on my face. Eating ain't cheating, Lord, it ain't no disgrace. Well, bring me a Lone Star, make you make it okay. Waitress, 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 sit on my face. Send us out tonight to the memory and the music of Levon Helm. He was a man and a friend always. He stuck with me in the hard old day. He never cared if we had no dough. We rambled around in the rain and snow. And here's to you, my rambling boy. May all your rain Tulsa town, we chanced to stray. We thought that we might work one day. The boss said he had room for one. Said my old pal, we'd rather bomb. And here's to you, my rambling boy. May all your to you, my rambling boy, may all your rambling bring you joy. Then late one night, in a jungle camp, the weather it was cold and damp. He got the chills, he got them back. I lost the only friend I had. And here's to you, my rambling boy. May all your rambling bring you joy. Here's to you, my rambling boy. May all your I think the first folk song I ever learned, a great Tom Paxton song. things have a certain cycle. There's moments in America where you can get ideas across. In Texas, when I ran for governor in 2006, by the way, I think we won that race every place but Texas, you know? There were many things we pioneered that really caught on. One of them was the wussification campaign, the anti-wussification campaign. And that was, oh God, you know, like, well, it was things like they took the Ten Commandments out of the public schools. And I said, put them back in, put the Ten Commandments back in the public schools. You know, just call them the Ten Suggestions or something like that. And then one of the worst was in Dallas, where I think I was the Grand Marshal of the St. Patrick's Day Parade in Dallas. I was riding in this vehicle, open car, which can be dangerous in Dallas. Yeah. I'm going to try to keep this line of thought going. Speaking of holding an unlit cigar, you know, I don't know why I do this. It may be a oral fixation. It may be a magic feather. But I do it. So I'm carrying it through the airport in Austin on my way to New York to come up here for this. And a TSA lady shouted, is that thing lit? And I said, to which thing, madam, are you referring? She was not amused. It's dangerous to play around with those people. Don't you? So this probably won't mean anything. You never know what's going to mean something to anybody. You know, but on the same incident, the same deal. So I walk through the customs. By the way, I'd like to introduce this is really getting disjointed, I know. It sounds like a man in a mental hospital speaking. But I would like to introduce a friend of mine who is the wheelman, and we haven't thought of a great title for him yet, but he's one of the principal characters in all my mystery novels. Let's give a big Northampton welcome to Mr. Mike McGovern. Mike? Don't get his balls all pumped up now. Let's talk about the cigar.
Wussification.
Oh, wussification, thank you. So, the worst example of wussification I could think of was what the Dallas people did. They started putting undercover cops in hotel bars to arrest drunks. And they were doing this. And I thought, man, and I went public with this. I said, what a waste of manpower for the police. And also, it's just chicken shit, you know, to do it. To put undercover cops in hotel bars. I mean, if you're an alcoholic, that's where you belong. I mean, that's where it's your home. And of course, it reminded me of an incident that happened to Oscar Wilde. It reminded me of the last time he was arrested, and that was in 1895 in London at the Cadogan Hotel. And it's an incident that I mentioned. I did some interviews about this, and, you know, I believe the only candidate running for governor who even mentioned Oscar Wilde. reportedly what happened was he was also arrested by undercover cops. And they came up to him on an evening that he was particularly walking on his knuckles. And Oscar was at the bar, and one of the undercover guys comes up to him, and he says, Oscar Wilde? And Oscar says, yes. And the guy says, "Do you know who I am?" And Oscar turns to the bar and he says, "Good God, there's a man here who doesn't know who he is." And I handcuffed him and took him away. But we have seen folks in our country, Barbara Jordan, who was probably Texas's gift to first black congressperson from the South. Barbara would have made a great president, a great Supreme Court justice. But Barbara warned in the 60s, she warned against political correctness. I mean, this is how she, like Churchill, like Woody Guthrie, I mean, she could see beyond the horizon. Very few people can do that. And when you get a real visionary, you want to use that person to his or her best ability. And we rarely do. The crowd always picks Barabbas. They always say, "Free Barabbas, kill Jesus." They do it every fucking time. That's what happens. So I don't feel bad about losing. Now, what was I talking about, sir? Yeah, Barbara Jordan warning against political correctness.
He also recommended the St. Paddy's Day parade when you were in Mobile.
All right, well, we'll go back that far. Very quickly on the St. Paddy's Day thing. I was in an open vehicle. A guy came up and gave me some Guinness, a can of Guinness, which, of course, is the drink that kept the Irish from taking over the world. Even Freud said, the only people who are impervious to psychoanalysis are the Irish. So this show is really scattered. Well, the trick is to pull it all together at the end. So I took a sip of this Guinness in a vehicle moving at maybe 1 mile per hour, and the Dallas Morning News got a picture of that. And it was on the front page. And it breaks the Texas open container law. If the vehicle's moving, you can't have an open alcoholic beverage in there. The first thing that happened is Mothers Against Drunk Driving, and everybody came down on me. It really got ugly. So we called a press conference quickly, and I said, I admit, I drank the Guinness, but I did not swallow. So Barbara warned that America would drown in political correctness, and I will tell you, folks, I think the day is here. I think it's happened. I think if a very young Richard Pryor were to walk into this club tonight, we could not make him a major star in America. I think if Mel Brooks was happening today, or Lenny Bruce, or George Carlin, they would not be mainstream successes. They would do okay, but they would not have the success that they did. Certainly, we could not make the movie Blazing Saddles in America today. So I just thank the Lord that at least we still have this song. Send it out to Marianne. Well, a redneck nerd in a bowling shirt with a Gosman Moon star, talking religion and politics for all the world to hear. They ought to send you back to Russia, boy, or New York City, one. You just want to doodle a Christian girl and you kill God's only son. I said, has it occurred to you, you nerd, that that's not very nice? We Jews believe it was Santa Claus that killed Jesus Christ. You know, you don't look Jewish, he said, near as I could figure. I had you lamped for a slightly anemic, well-dressed country nigger. All they making Jews, we don't turn the other cheek the way we done before. He started in shouting and spitting on the floor. Lord, rainbow. He says, now I ain't a racist, but Aristotle Onassis is one Greek we don't need. And I'm niggers, Jews, and Sigma Nus. All they ever do is breathe. And wops and mix and slopes and spicks and spooks are on my list. And there's one little heeb from the heart of Texas. There anyone I miss? You know, folks, at this point in the song, as I used to sing it every Sunday night at the Lone Star Cafe in New York, back when Christ was a cowboy and doctors drove Buicks, there was an old friend of mine who was this big, drunken albino named John Walsh. And John would stand up when the redneck in the bar, the bigot, would say, is there anyone I miss? John would shout, albinos! Now, what occurred after that was I traveled the country, and everywhere I played, there would be like one guy, one person in the back that would shout, at that point in the song, albinos! So it had to be, we never recorded it that way, so we had to either have been in the Lone Star Cafe to see this, or through oral tradition of folk music at some other level. Anyway, years passed, and less did people shout albinos, and finally it just disappeared altogether one day. John Walsh has become one of the top executives at the ESPN television networks, and I think I can say that he is probably the most influential albino in America today.
So that's...
Say what?
We're the Winter Brothers?
I think he's much bigger than the Winter Brothers. You know what I mean? So this is a different area. So anyway, what this is really is an experiment like the old time songwriters, the folk singers used to do, was to tell a story in the middle of the song and see if you could still save the song.
I know.
Well, I hits him with everything I had right square between the eyes. I says, I'm gonna get you, you son of a bitch, you're spouting that pack of lies. If there's one thing I can't abide, it's an ethnocentric racist. Now you take back that shit you said about Aristotle Onassis. All ain't making Jews like Jesus anymore. We don't turn the other cheek the way we've done before. You could hear that honky holler as he hit that hardwood floor, Lord. I ain't a-making Jews like Jesus anymore. Everybody in Massachusetts. All they ain't making Jews like Jesus anymore. They ain't making carpenters who know what nails are for. Well, the whole damn place was singing as I stroll right out the door. Quick mention about Kiki Freeman's Man in Black Tequila, which you may have heard a little bit about. It's all over Texas right now.
It is?
The problem, it's in 400 stores in 2.5 months. Of course, there may be 9 million. I don't know how many stores there are in Texas, but it's selling very well. Man in Black Tequila is the best Mexican mouthwash you will ever gargle. And that is great. And I know this, I have only 2 taste buds left. And they're having a party, though, I can tell. Man in Black salutes Zorro, Paladin, and Johnny Cash. Now this is not Man in Black. Well, I think the situation is we're up against people like Patron, who filter their stuff in stainless steel about 8 million times. Our tequila, this is not your father's tequila. This is your grandfather's gardener's tequila. And it's really the official old style Mexican, because we filter all this with clay. It's all filtered in clay.
Where can we buy it outside of Texas?
Well, okay, that's a good question. I think the only thing you can do is find someone you know, and don't come to me because I'm maxed out on cases of tequila that I've sent. I can't send it anymore. But find someone you know in Texas, can easily get it, and they can send it to you, which, whether legal, illegal, whatever, they can get it to you. They can bootleg it. It's called bootlegging. Yes, she's so. We'd like to get it up here if we could, because it, yeah. Oh, it has great Mexican mouthwash. I'd like to do this song, which I have done only one time, and that was last week at the Kerrville Folk Festival. This is a song, the first song I ever learned, and I think I was 7 or 8 years old, and I learned it from, I think it was Paul Robeson's record, but I'm not sure, who was a black communist in a great voice, and I think he did this, and I was a Jew living in Texas, and it's a song about an Irish Catholic martyr, and I learned the whole song as a kid. Then I let about 40 or 50 years go by, completely repressing it or forgetting it. And then I did a tour of Ireland, and fragments of it, like a mosaic, kept coming back to me, the lyrics, until I assembled the whole song together. And I said, hell, I told the promoter, I want to do this damn song, you know? It's from my childhood. And when he heard it was about Kevin Berry, he said, well, this is going to cause fist fights in the audience. This will degenerate into mayhem completely and cancel the whole tour. So you do not do that song. I've seen most audiences where no one has heard this song, or no one is familiar with it. Now, some of you are. This is a pretty cosmopolitan crowd. And you know, it takes a genius audience to make a genius performance. So let me try this. I think it's interesting in a lot of ways. It was the 1916 Easter Rebellion, Easter Uprising, I believe. And the kid, Kevin Berry, was 18 years old. Determined to play this through this entire bipolar tour. Whether, yeah, I mean, just bear with me, it could be a tragic mistake, it could be a cosmic moment. Also, the song lyrics that I'm going to sing you is my version, and it could be not what you would get if you Googled Jesus or something, and you might get something different. Early on, Sunday morning, high up in a gallows tree, Kevin Berry gave his young life for the cause of liberty. Only a lad of 18 summers, yet there's no one can deny, when he went to death that morning, nobly held his head up high. Shoot me like Irish soldier, do not hang me like a dog. For I fought for Ireland's freedom on that bright September morn, all around the little bakery where we fought them hand to hand. Shoot me like an Irish soldier, for I fought to free Ireland on that morning that they left him down there in his lonely cell. British soldiers tortured Barry just because he would not tell them the names of his brave companion and other things they wished to know. Turn informer and we'll free you, proudly Barry answered no. Shoot me like an Irish soldier, do not hang me like a dog, for I fought for Ireland's freedom on that bright September morn, all around that little bakery where we fought them hand to hand. Shoot me like an Irish soldier, for I fought to free Ireland. Another martyr for dear Ireland, another murder for the crown. Brutal laws to crush the Irish never break our spirit down. Lads like Barry are no cowards, from the foe they never fly. And their courage always has been Ireland's cause to live or die. Shoot me like an Irish soldier, do not hang me like a dog, for I fought for Ireland's freedom on that bright September morn, all around that little victory where we fought them hand to hand. Shoot me like an Irish soldier, for I fought to free Ireland. Song that got tossed out of the University of Buffalo campus for singing in 1973. That we did, it's a very harmless song, and we were attacked. The Texas U Boys were attacked by a group I could only describe as cranked up lesbians. Who attacked the stage and were breaking up all the instruments and stuff. And it's a lot uglier than it sounds. Now it sounds humorous, but I mean, they were winning. They were beating the Texas U-Boys. And the police were called, and we got a police escort off the campus. And then later that year, I received the Male Chauvinist Pig of the Year Award for the National Organization for Women. The award I'm still very proud of. You ugly women, I don't understand why you gotta go and try to act like a man. But before you make your weekly visit to the shrink, you better occupy the kitchen. Occupy, you see? I was way ahead of my time. Liberate the sink. Get your biscuits in the oven and your buns in the bed. That's what I to my baby said. Woman's liberation, it's a going to your head. Get your biscuits in the oven and your buns in the bed. Early every morning you're out on the streets, passing out the pamphlets to everyone you meet. You gave up your maiden form for Lent. Now the front of your dress has an air scoop vent. A single great man who's ever come along had a little woman always telling him he's wrong. Eve said to Adam, here's an apple you haul. Now Delilah defoliated Samson's mom. Get your biscuits in the oven and your buns in the bed. That's what I to my baby said. Office liberation is a going to hand. Get your biscuits in the oven and your bun in bed. Mean-minded harpies are breaking all the laws, tearing up the girdles and burning up their bras. Now the air is dirty and the sex is clean, and your coffee makes my hair turn green. So damn emancipated in your mind and your body, am I gonna have to cancel all your lessons in karate? If you can't love a male chauvinist, you better cross me off your shopping list. Get your biscuits in the oven and your buns in the bed. That's what I tell my baby said. Woman's liberation, it's gone to your head. Get your biscuits in the oven and your buns in the bed. Campaign for governor 2006, I used to drive my Yom Kippur Clipper across Texas campaigning. And a Yom Kippur Clipper, for those of you that don't know, it's a Jewish Cadillac in that it basically it stops on a dime and it picks it up. That's all. That's unusual. But I recall the campaign, I was driving past a mission in San Antonio, Texas. This was one of the smaller missions. Now, one of the very smallest missions in San Antonio is a little place called the Alamo. And if you stand out in front and watch the trip, well, first of all, how many people here have been to the Alamo? That's true all over the world. Millions of people visit this place. And if you stand out there in front and listen, you'll hear the people say things like, "It's so small. Look at it. It's so small." And of course, in Texas, a state that's known for everything being bigger, it is ironic that the little piece of real estate that we have most to be proud of is so small, and that is the Alamo. We passed this mission, not the Alamo, this other small mission, and I noticed in the courtyard was a large statue of Jesus. And praying with the statue was this, what looked to me to be a wealthy Texas rancher type of guy. So I got out and went inside. These are the words I heard the guy say. "Jesus, please help me. The Cadillacs are all in the shop. The oil wells have gone dry. The cattle got the blight. The IRS is after me." This guy had a litany of problems. Then he hears a noise. We'll get to that. On the other side of the statue, and the wealthy Texas rancher gets up, he walks around, he sees a little bitty Mexican down on his knees praying with the same statue of Jesus. And the Mexican is saying, "Jesus, please help me. My wife is pregnant. We already have 12 children. I've just lost my job. Now I think we're going to lose the house. And now I discover that my wife is sick. I don't know what I'm going to do." Well, the wealthy Texas rancher takes out his billfold, and he takes a $100 bill out of his billfold, and he hands it across to the little bitty Mexican. And he says, "Here you go, little buddy. Don't be bothering Jesus with that shit." Now, the incident the lady was referring to happened to Willie this past year when he was busted coming across from Mexico on the bus. And I saw Willie the next day, and he looked terrible. He looked like he just lost 6 ounces, you know. And I saw something that afternoon that I'll tell you, folks, I will never forget. And it was the image, the vision of Willie Nelson in handcuffs, signing autographs for law enforcement personnel. That's why we call him the Hillbilly Dalai Lama. Unless anybody think I'm a male chauvinist pig, I'd like to do a song that I wrote that I believe is the first pro-choice country song ever written, and maybe it will be the only pro-choice country song ever written. Just a ragged kid in overalls, bumped a ride one day. He told me anywhere you're going is on my way. But as we passed by Big Al's drive-in, his eyes began to flash. He was leaving Rapid City mighty fast. He said, I hope to God she finds the goodbye letter that I wrote her. But the mail don't move so fast in Rapid City, South Dakota. Now we left her just a blanket of snow upon the farm. And that don't keep your conscience very warm. He said his friends were too darn country, and his pa was too damn mean, and there weren't no money pumping gasoline. And her gentle eyes, the merchandise of dreams, the peddler sold her, left her there alone in Rapid City, South Dakota. And now the reason he was going, I ain't sure I could say. Might have been a rodeo in Santa Fe. There's a doctor in Chicago, I know she'll be alright, he told himself as he stared into the night. He said, I hope to God she finds a goodbye letter that I wrote her. But the mail won't move so fast in Rapid City, South Dakota. And all her people treating her just like they never know her. And the winners pass them slow in Rapid City, South Dakota. Interminable. Well, the problem is, Mike, neither Mike and I can hear what, because we're losing our hearing. Just wrapping up that Yom Kippur Clipper incident. Let me ask this: How many of you have been to Del Rio, Texas? This is a tough one. How many of you have been to Katoomba, Australia? Is there anyone here that's been to Katoomba? One. That is north of Sydney in the Blue Mountains, right? Yeah. An hour north of Sydney. I did a show there this past year with Van Dyke Parks, the man who orchestrated the cello on the Beach Boys song Good Vibrations. And we did 17 shows in Australia. All of them were my two favorite words in the English language, sold out. But when we did Katoomba, it was like at this old hotel that looked like The Shining, you know? And very eccentric town, very eccentric. And after the show, this guy comes up to me with a big, giant white beard, like a ZZ Top kind of beard, Santa Claus. And he says, "Kinky, my name is Yui." And I said, "Well, hi, Yui, how you doing?" He said, "No, not Yui, Yui, U-W-E. I'm German." And I said, "Well, you know, Yui, the Germans are my second favorite people. My first was everybody else." Wow. And of course, when we toured Germany about 6 or 7 years, there appears to be a pubic hair on my calf. When we toured Germany, it is not true that the Germans did not have a sense of humor. I mean, the audiences were filled with young people who knew every lyric to every song. And of course, there were no older people there. The old people were, you know, they still tie their shoes with little Nazis. I mean, they did not do the show, or they were dead or something. But the young people were great. And the concert promoter was very funny, the tour manager with us. And we were in Hamburg, the last show in Germany, and the next show was going to be in Paris. And so I asked the promoter, the German guy, I said, how far is it from Hamburg to Paris? And he said, it's about a 5-day march. Let's finish up Del Rio very quickly. I went to Del Rio in the campaign. I went into a grocery store to get some coffee one morning. There was a young Hispanic clerk. And, you know, as Jesus reportedly told the Mexicans, don't do anything until I get back. But this kid was different. This kid was a hustler. And I said, "Don't get him." And this is not a joke. The kid joined our campaign shortly thereafter and became a very savvy political operative. The kid was fast, too. And so while I'm standing there having this coffee, a customer comes in, and the customer says, "I want half a head of lettuce." And the kid says, "Well, I'll have to talk to the manager." So the kid walks to the back of the store to talk to the manager. He doesn't realize it, but the customer is following him. And when the kid gets to the manager, he says, "Some asshole wants to buy half a head of lettuce." And of course, the customer's right there and hears it. The kid senses this, though, and he quickly pivots and he says, "Ah, but this kind gentleman has offered to buy the other half." So the customer is very satisfied. He buys the other half. He goes home. And a few minutes later, we're up front again, and the manager comes up to the kid. The manager says, "Kid, I haven't seen anybody think on their feet that fast. Maybe never. That was great." He said, "I'll let you in on a secret. Our little store is being bought out by a giant Canadian grocery store chain. And kid, you could climb that ladder fast, and I'm going to tell you something, I'm going to help you do it." So the kid's reaction to that is Canada. Everybody there is either a whore or a hockey player. And then the manager's demeanor turns very cold toward the kid. He says, "Son, I'll have you know that my wife is from Canada." And the kid says, "Hey, no kidding, who's she play for?" I'd like to read to you a short chapter from the new book, my latest, Heroes of a Texas Childhood. Let me put in a plug for the Billy Bob Thornton book, the Billy Bob Tapes, Cave Full of Ghosts. "As I man my lonely post in this cave full of ghosts." Rather effeminate gestures in my head. Get on that. It's not same sex, it's same sex, remember? What the hell are we talking about? Billy Bob. The Billy Bob book. Now, as Willie Nelson says about Billy, there's a little bit of Sling Blade back there. The book is very interesting and a great gift for Father's Day. I recommend it highly. Don Imus is trying single-handedly to make this book go to number one on the bestseller list. And we'll see what happens. It was just activated this morning.
Really?
Now, the other book is something that I'm writing with Willie, and then I've actually had to write some of it, which is, the Billy book is more coaxing it out of him and taping it and transcribing it and that sort of thing. It's really his book. The Willie book is called Just As I Am, and it will be out in October. That will make 34 books that I have churned out, I mean, carefully crafted. But this is the latest that I've written all myself, and Heroes of a Texas Childhood. Some of you may know the name Jim Hightower. He's an independent. Texas Democrats hate him. I don't know why. He's really an old-time good Democrat, but they don't like that. The Republicans hate him. But Jim told me, he said, if you want to tell these people who you are, the best way to tell somebody who you are is to tell them who your heroes are. Now, if you told me, Nancy, that your three heroes were Donald Trump, Bill Gates, and Justin Bieber, that would tell me something. So I tried to assemble 23 of my heroes when I was a kid. And what I found out very quickly was how tragic their lives were and what failures they were, what obstacles were in their paths. So that's what made them heroes, not that they won a battle or anything, but the obstacles they had to overcome. When I finished the book, I showed it around to some college graduates from Texas, from all over Texas, who were counselors at my parents' summer camp up in the Hill Country. And these are pretty smart kids from all over the state. Well, they never heard of Barbara Jordan. They didn't know who she was. They never heard of Molly Ivins. They never heard of Audie Murphy. What the hell are we? I mean, they didn't know upon whose shoulders they stood. So I vowed right then that if I ever am governor of Texas, this book will be mandatory reading in the public school. So the story that I'm going to read you is about my father who died 11 years ago. This, by the way, being June 6th, D-Day, we want to salute everybody who's ever been in the armed forces. Do we have any vets here tonight?
Thank you.
As you can say to, all you can say to somebody, particularly the older guys, you know, from World War II. I mean, all you can say is thanks. That's it. Thanks. Nothing else to tell them. At any rate, my dad died about 11 years ago, and I would really hope that Billy Bob is wrong when Billy Bob says that the audience has now become the show on the internet. And as a result, you won't see any more heroes. You will not see any stars. You will only see product, like Lady Gaga or Justin Bieber or something like that. You won't see a young John Lennon coming up, you know, or a John Wayne, or a John Kennedy, or anybody named John. You won't see any of that. That's Willie's idea. I would just tell you that this story is kept in the present tense because I think you should keep everybody you love in the present tense as long as you can. And that's the way I like to think of my dad. This is called, and by the way, we'll be over there where Mike is. And I will sign any of these boogers for anybody you want. As you probably know, I will sign anything but bad legislation. Now, this story is called Tom Friedman, the Navigator. Because I'm the oldest living Jew in Texas who doesn't own real estate. And given my status in general as a colorful character, there are those who profess to be surprised that I ever indeed had a father or a mother. I assure you, I had both. For many years, my parents owned and directed Echo Hill Ranch, a summer camp near Kerrville where I grew up, or maybe just got older. I remember my dad, Tom Friedman, talking to all the campers on Father's Day in the dining hall after lunch. Each summer, he'd say essentially the same words. For those of you who are lucky enough to have a father, now's the time to remember him and let him know that you love him. Write a letter home today. Many years have passed since I last heard Tom's message to the campers. But love, I suppose, has no sell-by date. When my father was a young boy, growing up in the Chicago of the late 20s, his first job was working for a Polish peddler. The man had a horse and cart that was loaded up with fruits and vegetables. Tom sat on the very top. Through the streets and alleys of the old West Side they'd go, with the peddler crying his wares in at least five languages, and my father running the purchases up to the housewives who lived on the top floors of the tenement buildings. There were trolley cars then, and colorful clotheslines strung across sooty alleys like medieval banners. My father still remembers the word the peddler seemed to cry out more than any other. The word was kartoffel. It is Polish for potato. In November 1944, my mother, Minnie, gave birth to me in a manger somewhere on the south side of Chicago. I lived there 1 year, couldn't find work, and moved to Texas, where I haven't worked since. And all this time, my father was far away, fighting for his country and his wife, and a baby boy he might never see. Tom was a navigator in World War II, flying a heavy bomber for the 8th Air Force, the old B-24, also known as the Liberator, which, in time, it was. Tom's plane was called the I've Had It. He flew 35 successful missions over Germany, the last occurring on November 9th, 1944, 2 days after he learned that he was a brand new father. As the navigator, the responsibility fell to him to bring the 10-man crew back safely. In retrospect, it's not terribly surprising that fate and the powers that be had selected Tom to be the navigator. He was the only one aboard the I've Had It who possessed a college degree. He was also the oldest man on the plane. He was 23 years old. After each successful mission, it was the custom to paint a small bomb on the side of the plane. In rare instances of shooting down an enemy plane, a swastika was painted. When one incoming crew, however, accidentally hit a British runway maintenance worker, a small teacup was painted on the side of the plane. Practically engendering an international incident. Tom was a hero in what he still refers to as the last good war. For his efforts, he received the Distinguished Flying Cross and the Air Medal with three oak leaf clusters and the heartfelt gratitude of his crew. Yet the commanding officer's first words to Tom and his young compatriots had not been wrong. The CO had told them, look at the man on their left, look at the man on their right. When you return, he'd said, they will not be here. This dire prophecy proved to be correct. The mighty 8th suffered a grievous attrition rate during the height of the war. After the war, Tom and men moved to Houston, where Tom pioneered community action programs. Men became one of the very first speech therapists in the Houston public schools. In the late 50s, they moved to Austin, where Tom was a professor of educational psychology at the University of Texas. It was in 1953, however, that my parents made possibly their greatest contribution to children far and wide by opening Echo Hill Ranch. My mother passed away in 1985, but Tom, known as Uncle Tom to the kids, still runs the camp. Like most true war heroes, Tom rarely talks about the war. My sister, Marcy, once saw Tom sitting alone in a darkened room and asked, is everything all right, Father? To this, Tom replied, the last time everything was all right was August 14, 1945. That was the day Japan surrendered. On a recent trip to O'Hare Airport in Chicago, I commandeered a limo and drove through the area where Tom had grown up. There were slums and suburbs and Starbucks, but the trolley cars and the clotheslines and the peddler with his horse and cart were gone. Kartoffel, I said to the limo driver, but he just looked straight ahead. Either he wasn't Polish or he didn't want any potatoes. Today, Tom lives in Austin with his new wife, Edith Krueger, and his two dogs, Sam and Perky. He has three children and three grandchildren. He eats lunch at the Frisco, still plays tennis with his old pals. He did not, as he contends, teach me everything I know. Only almost everything. He taught me tennis. He taught me chess. He taught me how to belch. He taught me to always stand up for the underdog. He taught me the importance of treating children like adults and adults like children. He's a significant American because by his example, his spirit, and his unseen hand, he's guided children of all ages safely through the winding, often torturous courses of their lives. One of them was me. Tom's war is long over. Indeed, the whole era seems gone, like the crews who never came home, lost forever among the salt shaker stars. And yet, when the future may look its darkest, there sometimes occurs an oddly comforting moment when, with awkward grace, the shadow of a silver plane flies inexplicably close to my heart. One more mission for the Navigator. Thank you. If you're driving, don't forget your car. Okay, folks, let me leave you with a song written by my favorite songwriter of all time. It would have to be Woody Guthrie. And Woody wrote this little booger. He wrote this one back, I tried to figure out exactly when he wrote the thing. I guess it was when? Mid 30s. And what's remarkable about the song is that it so well describes the situation today. This guy was definitely seeing beyond the horizon. And it'd be wonderful to see a politician that could see as far as a musician. That would be a beautiful thing. And folks, may the God of your choice bless you. Just leave you with one little piece of advice. Find what you like and let it kill you. Gather round me, children, a story I will tell about Free Boy Floyd the Outlaw. Oklahoma knew him well. 'Twas in the town of Shawnee on a Saturday afternoon, with his wife beside him in a wagon. He was in the town he rode. Well, a deputy sheriff called him in a manner rather rude. He is in vulgar words of language. And his wife, she overheard. Well, Pretty Boy grabbed a long chain, the deputy grabbed a gun, and in the fight that followed, he laid that deputy down. He took to the woods and timbers, he lived a life of shame. Every crime in Oklahoma was laid unto his name. He took to the river bottoms along your North Canadian shore, and many a starving farmer opened up his door. For many a little farmer, the same old story goes, how Pretty Boy paid the mortgage, and he saved their little home. They tell about a stranger who came to beg a meal, and underneath his napkin left $1,000 bill. Oklahoma City, it was on a Christmas day, come a whole wagon load full of groceries and a note on which to say, you say that I'm an outlaw, you say that I'm a thief. Well, here's a Christmas dinner for your family's on relief. Now round this world I've rambled, I've seen many funny men. Some will rob you with a six gun, and some with a fountain pen. But as through your life you ramble, boys, as through your lives you roam, you'll never see an outlaw drive a family from their home.
Thank you.
asking for a song about the Texas Tower Killer, Charles Whitman, the first modern mass murderer.
Yeah. Yeah.
So this is a story about Charles. He was sitting up there in the morning hour, way up there on the Texas Tower, shooting from the 27th floor. He didn't choke or slash or slit them. Not a Charles Joseph Whitman. He won't be an architect no more. Got up that morning, calm and cool. Picked up his guns and walked to school. All the while he smiled so sweetly, then he blew their minds completely. They never seen an Eagle Scout so crude. Won't you think of the shame and degradation? All the school's administration, he put on such a bold and brassy show. The chancellor cried, "It's adolescent," and of course it's most unpleasant, but I gotta admit, it was a lovely way to go. There was a rumor about a tumor nestled at the base of his brain. He was sitting up there with his 36 Magnum, laughing wildly as he begged him, "Who are we to say the boy's insane?" Now Charlie was awful disappointed, else he thought he was anointed to do a deed so low down and so mean. Students looked up from the classes, had to stop and scratch their asses. Who'd believe he'd once been a Marine? Now Charlie made the honor roll with ease. Most all of his grades was A's and B's. A real rip-snorting trigger squeezer, Charlie proved to be the crowd pleaser, though he had been known to make a couple C's. Some were dying, some were weeping, some were studying, some were sleeping, some were shouting, "Texas number one!" Some were running, some were falling, some were running, some were falling, some were screaming, some were bawling, some thought the revolution had begun. The doctor tore his poor brain down, but not a snitch of illness could be found. Most folks couldn't figure just why he did it. Them that could would not admit it. There's still a lot of Eagle Scouts around. There was a rumor about a tumor he got nestled at the base of his brain. He was sitting up there with his 36 Magnum, laughing wildly as a beggar. Who are we to say the boys in? Who are we to say the boys in? Who are we to say the boys insane?